Now, I have a small confession to make. I like some of my junk mail. I like super cheap auto flyers, and I like Noel Leeming flyers. There's something about their pamphlets that gets me thinking, what do I need? Or what can I upgrade? Maybe you feel the same way about other retailers, I don't know. Our hearts move so naturally towards material increase. We lose ourselves in our spending and in our accumulating and in our empire building. We forget that there is more to life than admiring the abundance of our possessions. Now, Jesus touched on this to help us appreciate a simpler way of life, faithfully lived. So what I propose to do is the following. I want to look at what Jesus said about our spending habits, and then let's look at how to evaluate new spending habits, and then lastly, we'll look at why all of this matters to Jesus and why it should matter to us. Let's make a start. What did Jesus say about our spending habits? What does Jesus have to say about our spending habits? Let's look at verses 19 through to 21. Jesus said, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." You know, unquestionably, the issue at hand here is our possessions, it's our investments, it's our spending habits. Jesus prohibits one kind of possession hoarding, but he endorses another kind of possession hoarding. The prohibited kind of hoarding is the excessive increase of our material possessions. And the kind of hoarding that Jesus endorses is the increase of our spiritual possessions. And that may sound kind of vague to you. Spiritual possessions, what is that exactly? True enough, I've long struggled with that phrase, treasures in heaven. What is that exactly? And one of the things that bothers me about it so much is that Jesus doesn't tell us exactly what he's referring to. We know what treasures on earth are, but we have no idea what treasures in heaven are. So what are we to make of this? And John Stott was a massive help to me in this, to help me understand what Jesus is getting at here. Now, John Stott understood that treasures in heaven, to lay up treasures in heaven, is to do anything on earth whose effects last for eternity. To do anything on earth whose effects last for eternity. The development of a Christ-like character, the increase of faith, hope, and charity, growth in the knowledge of Christ, the active endeavor to introduce others to Christ, and to use our money for Christian causes. I think John Stott was right on the money with this. I think it's right to understand treasures in heaven this way. We're investing in those kinds of things which will carry over into eternity. But none of this comes naturally to us. Why? Why does pursuing treasures in heaven not come naturally to us? Because there's a kind of worldly narrative that we are bathed in from our birth that says the good life is found in the amassing of wealth and the accumulation of net worth. We're told that that's how you get to the good life. Own lots of stuff. Own good stuff. And make sure you got heaps in the bank account. That's why we're interested in the Forbes rich list. That's why billionaires impress us so much. That's why we sometimes catch ourselves daydreaming about having the kind of wealth of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk at our disposal. We imagine that the good life is found in the abundance of our possessions. But what if we're wrong? What if we're wrong about that? Have you thought about that? What if you're wrong, that that's not where the good life is found? What if amassing wealth and piling up our earthly treasure is not the measure of a good life as far as Jesus would measure it? What if it's not even sane to spend disproportionate amounts of our income on things that won't carry over to eternity? What if that's not even a sane way to live? Those are the kinds of questions Jesus is drawing out here, isn't it? Earthly treasure is an unsecure treasure. Jesus said it this way: moth and rust destroy, and thieves break in and steal our possessions. Entropy gets to it all. It will eventually wear out. And I know this might be a bit of a sensitive subject for some of you, but have you had anything stolen? Have you ever had someone steal something from you? I've had all kinds of things go missing in my life. My Makita drill set went missing in a garage sale one year. One of my most scarring memories is that of going to the AMP show as a child. I had just saved up, I think it was something like $30, to buy a new Chicago Bulls hat. And I went to the AMP show and someone took it off my head and ran away with it. Jesus was right. Thieves steal. More recently, we've had to throw away a Christmas tree that we just pulled out of storage because it got moldy. Even though I paid good money for it only a few years ago, it didn't last as long as I had hoped. So learn from Jesus here. It is an opportunity for me to learn from Jesus here. Earthly treasure, our possessions, are unsecure. One day they will wear out. They will rust. They might even be stolen. And the point Jesus makes here is this: because they wear out, because they are by nature temporary, because earthly treasure is by nature temporary, they are unfit. They are completely unfit to define or dominate our spending habits. Fortunately, there is an alternative. There's another way to do this. Jesus knows that we like heaping up treasures. We're built that way. We like to amass stuff, don't we? He who dies with the most toys wins, right? That's what we tell ourselves. We like to heap stuff up in our lifetime. Jesus knows this about ourselves, but he would say heap up something else. Heap up, but heap up something different from earthly treasures. And he calls that treasure in heaven. According to Jesus, there's another kind of treasure worth investing in, another kind of treasure worth spending on. A treasure that thieves cannot steal, a treasure where no decay will ever set in. But the question before us is this: how do we invest in that kind of treasure? Where do we go to buy stock? Right? How do we get our hands on that treasure in heaven? Getting your hands on it is a matter of the heart. It's a matter of the heart. Just as our hearts throw themselves at earthly treasures, those kinds of treasures that we drool over in the junk mailers, so our hearts could throw themselves at heavenly treasure, right? Just as we throw ourselves at the stuff in the junk mail, we could also throw ourselves at the things that Jesus talks about and would advocate for, called heavenly treasure. And to know which one you are really throwing your heart at, to know which way you are doing this, if you're doing it right, Jesus offers us a small test, a quick, small self-diagnostic tool. Verse 21, he says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." One of the things Jesus would ask you today is, what do you desire really? Not what do you desire that you tell your Christian friends, but what do you desire really? And the way to figure this out is to look at what the heart treasures. And the heart's not going to give you a direct answer. You're not going to sit down and say, "Heart, what do you really desire?" And it's going to be honest with you. The heart is deceitful above all things. It won't give you a straight answer. but it will drop enough crumbs for you to pick up its trail. Whatever the heart desires or treasures most is what we most truly live for and what we most dearly spend upon. That is to say, whatever we truly desire has enough magnetism to pull our bank account, to pull our spending habits. So the work that needs doing here to honor what Jesus is telling us here about a life that's faithfully lived is not to go about doggedly renouncing all earthly goods. I'm not telling you to go home and list all that you have amassed to date on Trade Me. That's not how we win this war. We are not here to renounce all earthly goods and to embrace minimalism in the hope of stumbling across the heavenly treasure that Jesus talks about. Rather, to get our hands on the heavenly treasure requires a new heart that desires heavenly treasure more than it desires earthly things. You need a new heart that desires the heavenly treasure more than the earthly treasure. And so it is a matter of the heart. Where do we get such a new heart? How do we get into a state where we actually desire the things of Christ more than the junk mailer? Well, the first place we get such a new heart is, of course, in our conversion to Christ. We must have a new heart given to us by God, and that new heart is given to all who come to Christ in faith. That's what we call regeneration, or being born again, because we are rebirthed with a new spiritual heart that desires Christ. That is why you must be born again, because your old desires are no good. You must have a new heart that desires new things, Christ-like things, and Christ himself. Second to this, the new heart must be exercised to stay healthy. God gives you the new heart, now you must exercise it for it to stay healthy. We call this sanctification. We must do to the heart what is good for the heart. Exercise it. And the exercise regime is here laid out for us in verses 22 to 23. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? You know, at first glance, as you may have heard it read or you've read it for yourself, this seems completely unrelated to talk of heavenly and earthly treasure, right? I mean, we're talking about treasure and all of a sudden Jesus is talking about an eyeball. What? I mean, it seems unrelated. It seems even more unrelated to what follows about serving two masters. But it's all of a piece, I assure you. It's all of a piece. Let's think about this more carefully. Jesus was picking up on an ancient idiom, an expression so common in his day as the expression first world problems are to ours. It's just an expression we use, and most people would understand what we mean by the words first world problems, right? Well, to Jesus, that expression about a healthy eye or an unhealthy eye or a bad eye is such an expression. People knew what you were talking about when you said it. In Jesus' day, to have a healthy eye is to be a generous person. It is to be willing to help. It is to use your resources in support of commendable causes and needs. If you were in the marketplace and someone said, man, that person's got a good eye or a healthy eye, they meant that he was generous or she was generous. If you were in the marketplace and someone said that they had a bad eye, it meant that people were stingy. They were miserly. You looked only for selfish gain. These are the two things Jesus is talking about. The healthy, generous eye, and also the bad eye, the stingy one. So what Jesus is saying here is this. The way in which we store up heavenly treasure, the good treasure that Jesus commends, is to be generous. Right? How do I get my hands on heavenly treasure? Be generous. It's that kind of unceremonious generosity that Jesus already hinted at when he said, when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. It is an unceremonious generosity, right? Here then is one way for which for us to store up the treasure that Jesus commends. Be generous with the resources that you have. Set your priorities. Work out a budget. Give as God requires. And then meet your needs and provide for the needs of your family, and then extend yourself to meet the needs of others. Set your priorities. All of this is an investment in heavenly treasure. But the reverse is also true. The reverse is also true. The bad eye, the stingy eye, the miserly person is also an investor. We're all investors. Don't miss Jesus' point here. We're all investing in something. But the bad eye, the stingy, the miserly eye, is buying shares in darkness. Because their eye is always trained on the things that are subject to corrosion, the bank accounts, the excessive luxuries, the want of nothing, always plotting to increase earthly treasure, you'll get what you are aiming at, a treasure that cannot last. If you have a bad eye, if you are selfish, if you are not a generous person, you will get what you are aiming at. You will want to amass an earthly treasure, and you'll probably get that, but that is all that you will get. Years ago, when I was learning to drive or to ride, you don't drive a motorbike, you ride a motorbike, I was told that you always hit what you are looking at. So where you look, on the road is the mark that you will hit. If you're riding a motorbike and you're only looking at the lamppost, you'll hit that mark also. That's just the way it works. Look where you want to go and you'll end up going there. And that's the point. If we look at the mark that Jesus set for us, we will hit it. In Jesus' teaching, if our outlook is healthy and generous and faithful, we will likely live accordingly. If that's what you're thinking about all the time, if that's where your eye is when you wake up in the morning and go to bed at night, you will likely live that way. If your outlook is bad, selfish, stingy, you will also likely live accordingly. So fix your eyes on healthy things. Fix your eyes on being faithful to the Lord, and you will likely see yourself living accordingly. Now, some of us finds this awfully binary. It's an either-or argument, isn't it? It sounds like we have to make a choice between faithfulness to God and the good life of material gain. And some of us ask, why can't we do both? I mean, it's a fair question. I'm not criticizing the question. Why can't we do both? Why can't we do like a 50-50 partnership with God here? We'll serve God, but we'll serve him as long as he doesn't dictate our spending habits. You know, can't we form some kind of partnership agreement with God here? But look at what Jesus says in verse 24. Not only does he instruct the formation of new spending habits for his disciples, he even supplies the reason why it matters. Why does your spending habits matter to Jesus so much? Does he want your money? No. He wants your devotion. He wants your heart. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot. Mark those words. You cannot, it is not a possibility to serve God and money. In application to what Jesus teaches here, we simply can't maintain an undivided loyalty in the pursuit of material wealth and God. We can't do it both. Right? We're simpler creatures than that. We just don't have the capacity in our hearts and minds to do both. We cannot pursue God and money with equal passion and loyalty. At root, it'll either be money or God, which is the ultimate satisfaction of your soul. One of those you will trust more than the other. To put it another way, God and money, or mammon, as it is in the Greek, are rivals. They are rivals to our allegiance. They both invite us to trust them, right? Earthly treasures invites you to trust them. And so does God. Both invite our investment of our time and energy. Both invite our love and our loyalty. Job in Old Testament times knew this. He could imagine trusting money. He could imagine trusting money the way one ought to trust God when he said, If I made gold my trust, or called fine gold my confidence. I mean, he could imagine what it would be like to speak to his bank account and to his possessions, you have my trust, you have my confidence. Jesus is no sucker. He knows that wealth can be as much a rival to God as rank paganism. Right? It is a rival. It's a subtle rival, but it is a rival no less. We know it's subtle because how often have you heard someone say to you, I would rather have money than God? It takes a special kind of brazenness to say it that way, doesn't it? So it is more subtle. It usually works its way into our lives quietly and unnoticed. Functionally, we whisper that truth that we would rather have money than God. We whisper that truth to ourselves when we hoard more and more for ourselves, while at the same time becoming less and less generous in our outlook toward others. That's how wealth and possessions and earthly treasure slowly and often imperceptibly secures our devotion. By illustration, and this is just to cut through the vagueness of all of this, if you're lost in it and you're like, oh, this doesn't make any sense to me, bro, just to cut through all the vagueness of it, I once heard a man ask quite bluntly, if you were accused of being a Christian, would the proportions of your outgoing expenditure prove your guilt? That kind of took my breath away at the time, but it's a shocking question. It's really sobering. If they're being accused of being a Christian, will my bank account prove it? You know, while we consider this, we must also be careful not to assume the worst about material wealth. Don't assume the worst about material wealth or those who have wealth at their disposal. Hear me say this. Neither wealth nor money is the root of our evils. Understand that. Wealth and money is not the root of our evils. The love of money and wealth is the root of our evils. And we ought to make this distinction, and we ought to make it really clear in our own minds. Jesus does not have in his mind disciples who give up on life and material possessions and go and live in a cave somewhere. That's not what Jesus has in mind. He does not have in mind disciples who have no idea how to budget or what to do with the money that God has given them. Jesus has no such thing in mind. No, we ought to receive all God's blessings, of which material goods is one such blessing, with thanksgiving. If you have a lot, go to bed that night and say thank you to God for it. It's a gift. He gifted it to you. He's pleased to give it to you. Receive it with thanksgiving, knowing that everything created by God is good and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving. Don't despise what God has given you or someone else. Don't despise your own wealth, or if you see wealth in someone else, don't despise that gift. Receive it with thanks to God for his kindness. At the same time, if we have been given more wealth than what we need, we must not open up more and more trust accounts to stash it away in, right? Jesus told a parable about this, about a man who had great wealth and he built bigger and bigger barns to store away all his wealth and his possessions. Jesus says, don't do that. That's not why God gives you excessive wealth. No, Christians who have a good deal more than what is needed ought not to set their hopes on the uncertainties of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. These are good and healthy spending habits to abide by. Now, all of this, of course, points us to the generosity of God. This is all about the generosity of God. He has given us talent, skills, and a fertile mind. He has given us a plentiful world which is for us to enjoy and to sustain our livelihoods, meet our obligations, and to provide generously for those who have genuinely fallen on hard times. The world is yours to enjoy. Receive what God has given you with thanksgiving, and then meet your obligations as he has given them to you also. Often in our spiritual blindness, we take the gifts of God, in this case our material blessings of abundance, and we turn them into a god and we pledge our allegiance to it. We take the gift of God, we turn it into a god, and we swear our allegiance to that idol that we have made for ourselves. It is an age-old problem. Humanity has been beset by this for a very, very long time. Without coming to Christ, all humanity is resigned to this. They exchange the truth about God for a lie, and they worship and serve the creature, material blessings often, rather than the Creator. Right? That's what draws on our hearts. Without coming to Christ, we perpetually serve the creature rather than the Creator. And the only way out of that hole is through repentance and faith in Jesus Christ. When you come to him, know that he has seen your folly. He knows how we fail to love God with heart, soul, mind, and strength. And yet the Father has seen to it that all those who come to Christ, crucified for that sin of our idolatry, will be saved. There is a way out. The Father has made certain of it. So ever needful of him, you are invited to come to him by faith once more. Renounce the craving for earthly treasure at the expense of heavenly treasure. Christ bids you, come. Come to him. Learn from him. Be free. Be generous. Be joyful in the pursuit of heavenly treasure.